Welcome to the Council of Trent podcast, a production of Catholic Answers.
I know you have the Council of Trent on your phone, your computer, but have you considered maybe transcribing the electronic files in the Council of Trent onto titanium plates with some kind of universal decoder? That way, your great, 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 great grandchildren will be able to enjoy these episodes. Because if you don't, the episodes of this podcast, your favorite podcast, important pieces of knowledge from the human community may be lost forever in something that we call a digital dark age. Welcome to the Council of Trent podcast. I'm your host, Catholic Answers apologist Trent Horn. On Mondays and Wednesdays, we talk apologetics and theology. But on Friday, we talk about whatever I want to talk about. And today I want to talk about something called digital obsolescence, digital information loss, digital dark ages. It goes by a lot of different names. But the basic idea is that when we save information electronically, it can be very easy for that information to be lost, to not be preserved. Now, this is something we didn't have to worry about for a long time because, well, I mean, if you think about it, though, throughout history, a lot of information has been lost based on the medium that it was stored on, right? So the earliest manuscripts of the New Testament, for example, were written on papyrus, and that's kind of like, you know, a hardened leaf, reed type material that you would write on. It's much easier for that to decay. Manuscripts that were written on things like leather vellum lasted much longer, especially when they were put into codices, which are kind of the forerunners of books, rather than papyrus scrolls. But some of it does last if you can store it right. So for example, back in 1946, there were these shepherd boys in Israel around the Dead Sea in Qumran, and they were throwing rocks, and they threw rocks into this cave. They heard something break. They go inside, and they see a bunch of alabaster jars, stone jars, and some of them had broken, and inside of them were these scrolls. And so then later the scrolls were sold and then recovered, and archaeologists and historians, ancient language experts, realized that these were passages of the Old Testament, passages of ancient Jewish works, some that were 3,000, 2,000, 3,000 years old, that had managed to be preserved because they were in a dry environment protected from the elements in these caves. And it's amazing that they lasted that long. You know, these scrolls lasted thousands of years. But today we have electronic technology that might only last for like a few decades. So you have things like disk rot, for example. You have CDs and other disks that the material starts to flake off of it. And I know this myself because there's media and material from 20 years ago that I've tried to preserve, and you can't find that anymore. So here's an article from the University of Illinois that says, "Digital Dark Age may doom some data." Here's how it starts. What stands a better chance of surviving 50 years from now, a framed photograph or a 10 megabyte digital photo file on your computer's hard drive? The frame photograph will inevitably fade and yellow over time, but the digital photo file may be unreadable to future computers, an unintended consequence of our rapidly digitizing world that may ultimately lead to a digital dark age, says Jerome McDonough from the Graduate School of Library at University of Illinois. According to McDonough, the issue of a looming digital dark age originates from the massive data spawned by our ever-growing information economy. At last count, 369 exabytes worth of data, electronic records, tax files, email, music, and photos, for starters. An exabyte is one quintillion bytes. A quintillion is the number one, followed by 18 zeros. And so you have this concern that it's not going to last. They give an example here of something from, and this is important. It's not just like, oh, we're going to miss out on these photos or these family heirlooms. And that kind of stuff is important. That's something I was concerned about. I got some of my parents' old VHS tapes digitized and copied them into multiple file formats. That's a lesson I've learned painfully, by the way. I remember oh gosh, how long ago was it? It would have been like maybe 25 years ago, 20 years ago, 25 years ago. I had a bunch of information on an old Seagate hard drive, and the hard drive crashed, and I just lost all that. I didn't have a backup for it. So now when I back up my material, I put it on two separate physical hard drives. I also have stuff in the cloud, but I have two hard drives stored in two separate locations, and each hard drive is in a Faraday box. Actually, it's a bag. It's a metallic bag to protect it from EMPs, electromagnetic pulses. But at the very least, having two hard drives in two separate locations, like keep one in your office, locked in your desk, or one at your parents' house, it's nice because if something happens to the location where one hard drive is in, you have another one to back up, or you could count the cloud as one backup, but you should also have a physical drive unconnected from the internet where you have things that are stored there because things can happen. I had that old hard drive, doesn't work. If you look at old VHS tapes, first off, trying to get information from VHS tape, you need a VCR that works. Those are hard to come by. On VHS tapes, cassette tapes, on the anything uses kind of like this these plastic strips, they have a magnetic film over it, and the magnetic film flakes off over time. Same thing happens to things like floppy disks, CD-ROMs. It flakes off, and when it does that, the information literally goes away along with it. So you have a big problem with that. Even if you keep the information on the magnetic tape itself, if you don't have a reader for it, then what are you going to do? The information's stuck there. You can't retrieve it. I'll give an example from this article. It says, magnetic tape, which stores most of the world's computer backups, can degrade within a decade. According to the National Archives website, by the mid-1970s, only two machines could read the data from the 1960 U.S. Census. One was in Japan, the other in the Smithsonian Institution. Some of the data collected from NASA's 1976 Viking landing on Mars is unreadable and lost forever. So the Viking program is an interesting element of this digital dark age. So it says here, only a decade after the 1970s Viking program, NASA personnel discovered much of the mission data stored on magnetic tapes, including over 3,000 unprocessed images of the Martian surface of Mars that came from the Viking probes, was inaccessible due to a multitude of factors. While in possession, then they had what they called indecipherable notes written by long-departed or deceased programmers in order to recreate the software and the hardware that was necessary to find these to get the information off of the tapes. Everyone who knew how to do that didn't write it down, or they weren't there anymore. They retired, they were dead. Information was eventually recovered after more than a year of reverse engineering how the raw data was encoded onto the tapes, which included consulting with the original engineers of the Viking lander's cameras and imaging hardware. So they had to actually find somebody somewhere, some retired NASA guy. They go and find him. Hey, do you remember how this works? Because none of us can figure it out. Something similar happens in the digital dark age with other military tech. One of these is Fog Bank, F-O-G-B-A-N-K. It says here, Fog Bank is a code name given to a secret material used in W-76, 78, and W-88 nuclear warheads. So the Fog Bank's precise nature is classified. One of the managers of the project says, the material is classified, its composition is classified, its use in the weapon is classified, and the process itself is classified. All it says is it's used in nuclear weapons, though other researchers looking into Fog Bank believe it's some kind of an aerosol. An aerogel material. It's part of the interstage material for the bomb to go off. So the way a nuclear bomb works is that you have a conventional explosive inside of the bomb. It goes off. It's just like a regular bomb. It goes off, and then it triggers a chain reaction in the uranium fission material. And I think in some bombs, that also has a cascading effect to create a fusion reaction. So you have different elements within there to stabilize and separate these different chains of explosions. And Fog Bank was one of those things. By the way, I remember there's a great scene in an old movie. It's from the 90s, I think. It's not that old. Peacekeeper with George Clooney. He's trying to disarm a nuclear device and he disarms it, but he's not able to, but he keeps the nuke from going off, but the conventional bomb in the warhead is still going to explode. So they have to like throw it out or get out of there, and it just makes a small explosion rather than a nuclear explosion. So it says here that in 2000, the NNSA, National Nuclear Security Administration, had specified a life extension program for W-76 warheads to enable them to remain in service until at least 2040. So we need Fog Bank as part of the element for them to work. Nobody knows how to make the stuff. So they end up having to do another reverse engineering process. They use computer simulations. It turns out they were able to recreate Fog Bank even better than what they had made previously back in the 70s, and it had less impurities in it. But it turns out that when they ran computer simulations with the new Fog Bank, it didn't work. It's also hard to make this stuff because you can't really test it by going out and blowing up nukes anymore because of all of the non-proliferation treaties. So they used it, and it turns out it didn't work. It actually needed more impurities in the process that came from how it was made in the 70s versus how it's made today to get that. It's like that magic bit in the recipe. You try to recreate the KFC original recipe. Sometimes you make things too artificial, too processed. You can't get those imperfections in the recipe or what made it so good. Here's another example of that, coming back to what I was referencing earlier, if you're just trying to digitize materials to be able to store them. This is from an archive librarian. She writes, in 2020, while processing the Marjorie Sill papers, I encountered a floppy disk. I followed our procedure for sending legacy media and digital storage to digital services for file extraction. The files were in a version of Microsoft Word from the late 1990s and initially showed on our screens as complete gibberish. Current computers could not read the file. And so she goes on to talk about how magnetic tape formats age. But even if the physical medium doesn't degrade, even if you have the data there, if you don't have the operating system or the hardware to be able to run it, you might have something. It's like having a lockbox with no key, so no way to be able to open up the box to get the information out. And this is happening to us as you have things like word processing programs and other programs that you try to open it. This has happened to you. It might happen to you sometimes. I know it's happened to me to open an old version of a Word program and it says not compatible current Word and it just can't get it. Sometimes you can open it up maybe in Linux or Notes or something like that and you get the bare stripped down version of the text itself. If you try to open up other older files, it can just turn out we can't read them without the original operating system or hardware that's long gone. This is also a problem in video games. I've known this personally. So recently I purchased a SNES Classic, which is also obsolete because they don't make them anymore. So you have the Super Nintendo, right, from the 90s. I still have my old Super Nintendo. It still works. A fair number of the older game cartridges I have from the 90s do not work anymore. They don't turn on. I probably blew into the cartridge too much. You know, it's like you blow into it to try to free it up. I'm sure that was the worst thing you could do for the cartridge because you're getting your spit and everything else onto those sensitive components. So some of the cartridges just don't work. They don't turn on anymore. They die. Dun, dun, dun. And other ones do work, though. Some of them, one of them, I have Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles in Time. The cartridge degraded a bit, so now you have infinite lives. And that's very rewarding to be able to give to my children because then they can play it with infinite lives and it's super fun for them just to play and beat Turtles in Time because it's a hard game if you don't have infinite lives. And most of those older games, it can be hard to put in the cheat codes unless you have the Game Genie to play along with it, provided your Game Genie still works. So I bought an SNES Classic that had been produced a few years ago, and that has, it looks like a Super Nintendo, but it's just a small computer. There's a little USB port to go out in your TV because that's the other problem. You have these older game consoles. Yeah, you have your old game console, but if the TV you plug it into doesn't have RCA, you got to get a converter. Sometimes that doesn't work. So I got the Classic. And even these older games, like to try to save these video games, you run emulators or it's ported over in a new format. It's just not the same. It's just not the same. I tried to... Now, some of the games you can't notice as much, but on the newer HD TVs, the way that the old school graphics are relayed, it's just not as nice as it used to be on the old CRT televisions. Star Fox. Star Fox is a game I loved as a kid because it had the Super FX chip in it. And you felt so cool with those basic 3D polygon graphics. I still have Star Fox. It still works. I bust it out every now and then. It's just for dad, not for kids, because kids break everything. But I have it on the SNES Classic. And it's just not as good. It doesn't sound as good. The music skips a bit. It's a bit slower. It's not, no matter, it's so amazing to me that you make these games, like the amount of information on there to make these old Nintendo and Super Nintendo games, there's probably hardly any information required. Like a very tiny chip could have it all. But you just can't recreate it with a newer digital file like you can with the older CPUs, the older disk circuit boards, and you know other things like that, the older cartridges that you use. It just is not the same. So it says here that digital obsolescence has a prominent effect on the preservation of video game history. Some of the oldest computer games, like 1962's Space War for the PDP-1 commercial minicomputer, were developed for hardware platforms so outdated they are virtually non-existent today. Many older games of the 60s and 70s built for contemporary mainframe terminals and microcomputers can only be played through software emulation. As I said today, that they're just not as good. So hopefully, though, people are trying to save this information through emulation, through different copying procedures. And now some of the things you can emulate, they're not that hard. I think the original Oregon Trail that you played on your old Apple computer when you went to the, remember when you went to the computer, if you were my generation, you went to the computer lab in 1998, you played, there were two games you played, Oregon Trail and SimCity 2000. And there was a password, it had a naughty word in it also, but there was a password on SimCity 2000 you could put in to get infinite money. So you just sat around and just made giant cities and then sent the giant robot to wreck them. Or you played Oregon Trail and put all your friends' names down and watched them one by one die of dysentery, and you know, you go out hunting. You shot 1,200 pounds of bison. You could only bring 100 pounds back to the wagon. Forget that. I only brought 100 pounds. I got people with me. You drag that bison back to the covered wagon for the rest of us. So it also says here that on January 1st, 2021, Adobe ended support and blocked content from running in its Flash player in response to advancements in open standards for the web. Since January 2018, Blue Maxima's Flashpoint has been one of several Adobe Flash player preservation projects, salvaging more than 110,000 animations and games. Because there's a lot of things. I mean, throughout history, I'm sure there was a lot of art that was created that's been lost. I think somewhere like 99% of ancient documents have been lost over time. But there's a lot of art. I mean, not a lot of people were making art throughout history, right? Most people were just trying to survive and get by. But today, you got people making art left and right, and it can just get lost. There's even concerns that the Internet Wayback Machine is not able to preserve websites like it once did. I've actually used that, the Internet Wayback Machine, to go back and find old photographs that had been posted on my youth ministry website for the youth group I was a part of 20 years ago. I was helping a friend out trying to find pictures for him for, there was someone's birthday or anniversary. And obviously the website for our old youth group doesn't exist anymore, but the pictures could still be found on the Wayback Machine. So it's always cool to see people working through that to try to pull things together to preserve the knowledge that we have. So that's just a little bit of a taste of the digital dark age. What can you do to stave off the digital dark age? Well, one, don't worry. At the end of the day, everything we have in this world will kind of fade away at the second coming, right? So don't be too in love with the past. But I do think it's prudent if you have information, pictures that you like, documents, back them up. Get two separate hard drives. If you have pictures and especially VHS tapes, you can usually find a service that will digitize the tapes and CDs for you. So just get it digitized and save it in two different physical storage mediums. And then just every few years, transfer it over to a new hard drive, to what's the latest thing for file storage. So great. I hope this is helpful for you all, and I hope that you have a very blessed weekend.
If you like today's episode, become a premium subscriber at our Patreon page and get access to member-only content. For more information, visit TrentHornPodcast.com.